Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It's June 6th, 2022. Beautiful weekend, beautiful day. More springish than summer, but that's fine. I don't even know. Are we in summer? Summer, spring? I don't know. The other day it felt like summer. I thought we were in summer. Now it feels more like spring, so might be more like spring, but whatever. It's beautiful. No complaints. Great weekend. Very busy. A lot of stuff going on. I was thinking, I read that, a couple things interesting. So where I live, like him or not, the president of the United States comes here and has a house here in Rehoboth. And it's very interesting because obviously one, he's the president and, you know, wherever the president goes, it's a whole production, you know, with the Secret Service and stuff, which I think is actually kind of cool. I love it. But when the president is in town, they set up a no-fly area, meaning pretty much self-explanatory. You can't fly around here. I don't know what the radius is, 50 miles, 100 miles, 200 miles, I don't know. But you cannot fly a plane around this area when the president is at the beach. And so I guess it was Saturday. I'm in the house and I hear this jet just roaring above my house. And I don't want you to think that, like, I live with the rich and famous, because I don't. We actually live outside. We live in Rehoboth. The president has a house in Rehoboth Beach, which is basically down by the beach. You know, I can ride my bike to his house. Jesus. Unknown caller. I could ride my bike to his house, but the level of wealth from where he's at to where I'm at is, you know, a huge difference. But regardless, I think it's super cool that the president lives here or has a house here. But like I said, on Saturday, man, this plane starts raging across the sky, kind of circling around. I kind of go outside and take a look. I'm like, what's up with that plane? And every once in a while, we'll have jets that come roaring across the area. Just, I think, routine patrol or whatever they do. But this one definitely had... the pattern was a little unique, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. He must be just flying around because the president is in town. So, well, sure enough, some guy came flying up in this area in an airplane, and oh, my goodness. They hustled the president out of the house. Secret Service shut down the town. It was a whole big thing. Flew an F-15, intercepted the plane. They did not shoot him down, but they had some communications. But it was interesting, and... you know, I guess that's what happens when you live in the same town with the president, because it got pretty testy. And I didn't really realize what was going on at the time. I did see the jet. I did wonder what was going on. You know, it's funny, when you live where you live, however long you live there, you start to become routine with things, sounds and certain planes that fly by and helicopters and sirens. And, you know, it's just a... you start to settle into the typical sounds, and when something isn't as typical, like an F-15 fighter jet circling the area, you start to go, I wonder what's going on. And but that's what was going on. Kind of cool. You know, nobody was hurt. President's fine. I'm sure some people. I don't know. I don't understand why we hate the president so much. I mean, I get it. I'm paying almost $5 for gas. I mean, is that his fault? I don't know. Who the fuck knows anymore? What the hell? Who's in control here? Elon Musk might be even the president. Who knows? Maybe this is a push towards electric cars, but it is painful. It is painful. You know, I'm not going to make this about, you know, inflation, but, you know, I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried because, you know, it's become so expensive. And, you know, we had, my daughter had a, she rides on a horse, she does horse shows, and so we went to this horse show, and everything, you know, usually we'd buy barbecue sandwiches there. We took my son and his girlfriend and my wife and I and Teresa, and you know, usually we buy barbecue, and we kind of really support the stable and stuff, and it was so expensive. It was like $8 a sandwich. I'm like, geez. You know, times five, we're looking at $40 just to for some sandwiches. And I said, I don't think I can do it. And so we didn't buy anything. We didn't support the stable. I felt really bad about it. And on the way home, I kept thinking, well, we'll stop and eat somewhere cheaper. But there was nowhere that was cheaper. And I just was like, God, I don't know what to do here. And eventually I just got us home, and then I just made everybody lunch. I made sandwiches, and that was actually really good and much more reasonable than what we would have done. But, you know, it's kind of a bummer, you know. I like to support local business. I have a local business. I appreciate people supporting my business, and I want to support businesses. But, man, the price of everything is going crazy. So one of the things like we do is we'll go to, you know, certain restaurants do certain things a little better than others. And one of the restaurants we like to go to is Pat's, and they'll serve us. We can split a meal. It's still expensive, but we can split it. And they have a nice, they'll serve it to us on two plates. And, you know, they just, maybe there's a plate charge. I don't know. But it still allows us to eat out, but at a little cheaper price, still being able to support. I know for me as a small business owner, I'm, you know, it's about being very friendly, right? A lot of smiles, a lot of thank yous, a lot of gratitude. Because, listen, people are struggling. And I know for a business owner or the business that I'm in, I'm always trying to create ideas for people to save a little money. You know, I'm a hairdresser. People come in and get hair color, and they get highlights, and they get cuts. And I just basically do cuts and colors. I don't do perms, and I do smoothing treatments as well. But the point is that, you know, sometimes a person will come in for highlights, color, toner, haircut. You're looking at what used to be about $185 is now over $200. And in the past, people used to, you know, I've had clients that would do that every visit. And so as an owner and as an operator, I try to come up with ideas like, hey, maybe we can just do color this time and then highlights the next time, you know, and try to go every other time, which saves a lot of money. Sometimes they're like, nope, I want to do it. And I'm like, no problem. But I know for a guy that wants to stay in business, right, I don't want to become a financial burden on people. So I as an owner, try to give options. And I think it's, you know, I think we're going to start kind of going through this period where we're going to start finding that we're going to need humility. I need it. I need to stay very humble and recognize that, you know, there's good times and bad, right? There's ups and downs. And, you know, for the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, things have been pretty good. But we are getting ready to go through some tough times. And for me to stay humble and realize that, it's not important to get the most money. It's important that I consistently get a little less money, if you know what I mean. You know, I'd rather have somebody come in and get less services consistently through this period than someone come in and say, God, I can't believe I just paid over $200. I'm not going back. You know, I have to have the humility to say, listen, it's not important to me that I make a $200, you know, service. It's more important that somebody continues to come every 6 weeks and maybe, you know, take the price down or just figure out ways of making it more reasonable. So that's kind of what's going on. It's really tough. We also live in a town that's near the beach, so it's a little bit like Disneyland, minus the castle and the mouse. People come here. It's part of their vacation. I know, like, and this, you know, this is how it used to be, but when we would go, like, we have a big music festival here, Firefly. It's always kind of this running joke. We're going to get the $7 lemonades, you know, when you go to a festival or a concert or a sporting event, the price of those things are ridiculous. But you're like, hey, it's, you know, it's part of the day. We already know we're going to probably buy $4, $7 lemonades. And, you know, and it's funny and sort of prepared. But now it's like, I don't know if I would buy the lemonade, or maybe we'll share one, right? Or something like that. I don't know. It's crazy. I'm just grateful that I'm alive, right? I'm grateful I'm alive, and I'm grateful that I am sober. I thought that I sort of been bouncing around 5, 6, and 7, or at least 5 and 6, and I thought maybe I would just start reading step 7. Step 7 is really, I think these are some of the coolest steps right here, right? I mean, 5, you know, sharing all of our darkest secrets with a human being, that pushing through that ultimate fear, right? That ultimate embarrassment, right? The ultimate shame is to say all of our darkest, dirtiest secrets out loud to another human. And if we can push through it and realize we're not going to burst into flames and die, something starts to happen. Something magically starts to happen. So that the fifth step, you know, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. It's huge. And I think I personally have veered off my success because I'm not sure I did that correctly or thoroughly or honestly the first couple of times I did it. And definitely didn't understand what the purpose was. But step 6 says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And this is, you know, and I read this the other day, and it was really cool. Step 6, necessary for spiritual growth, the beginning of a lifetime job. Recognition of difference between striving for objective and perfection. Why we must keep trying, being ready, is all important. Necessity of taking action. Delay is dangerous. Rebellion may be fatal. Point at which we abandon limited objectives and move towards God's will for us. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, rebellion may be fatal. Fuck this, right? And then step 7 is, which I wanted to talk about a little bit today, which was humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And it says, what is humility? This is a great question. My dad asked me this. What is humility? What can it mean to us? The avenue to true freedom of the human spirit? Necessary aid to survival? Value of ego puncturing? Failure and misery transformed by humility? Strength from weakness? Strength from weakness. Pain is the admission price to new life. Self-centered fear, chief activator of defects. Step 7 is the change in attitude which permits us to move out of ourselves towards God. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've said this before. I've never met anybody that just said, hey, you know, I think that I'm going to get sober because I'm exhausted from lifting this vodka up to my mouth.
Excuse me, love.
Yeah. Slow Change. You know, I never heard this album before. I think it's the first Blues Traveler album. It is freaking amazing. Spent all weekend kind of diving into that. But, yeah, you know, when people say, oh, yeah, I just decided to quit, I think it's fucking, they're lying. Doesn't mean I'm calling them a liar. But, you know, I know what it took for me to get off the fucking hooch, and it wasn't, I had many days where I said, geez, I think I drink too much, I should quit. And by the end of the day, I was hammered. You know, it's that ego puncturing. Fucking ego devastation, complete humiliation. Does there start to be an opening for me to jump on the sober train? That seems to be, for me, the only way that I can get sober. It's actually complete humiliation, ego devastation, ego puncturing. It says it right in there. Punched in the mouth, crashing a car, grabbing somebody's ass. You know, I've shared before the guy that, you know, back in the day, pre-pandemic, very regular AA meeting attender, and you would just see a whole different slew of people, right? And, you know, a lot of people would come in around the holidays because of Christmas parties. Believe it or not, people get drunk, and I think we're getting a little better, but back in the day, people would get fucking hammered at a Christmas party and say something or do something to somebody that would be so humiliating and so ego-devastating that they would end up coming into a room or a program. You know, it's like, you know, I didn't want to get sober until I got punched in the face. Getting punched in the face didn't even make me want to get sober. The split lip, the embarrassment, the shame. My ego was like, fuck, this is bad. We're going to have to hide. And that's exactly what I did. All under the idea that I wanted to get sober. And really, what I wanted to do was I didn't want my ego to be embarrassed. And so that's what it takes. You know, unfortunately, you know, it's easy to get on this bus. It's not easy to get off of it. And usually the bus has to crash and you have to be tossed out a window, flipped out and land on your head in a field. And hopefully you're not dead and your ego's deflated enough where you can start to work towards making a change and getting better. And, you know, when I got initially that first time I got sober 4 years later, those memories had disappeared. You know, my ego had slowly, the hole wasn't big enough in my ego, and it slowly got patched and slowly started to inflate again and inflate again and inflate again, and humility started to go away, and self and ego, the devil, right? That's what I call him, the devil. People love to change. You know, it's the devil. Ego, pride, self, all these things that reflect to me, about me, it's all the devil. But you know, that devil starts to fuck. It's like that when you go by the used car lot and those things, they kind of blow up and they look like people, you know, floating around in the wind. It's how the devil was. He was completely deflated that day, but he just started, you know, like they say, the devil's always doing pushups, or self or ego is always doing pushups in the corner. That's what I think. The devil was over there doing pushups. It took him 4 years, and then he showed up and he's like, hey, I'm back. How you doing? Look how good you've done. And I'm like, yes, look how good I've done. I wasn't living a humble life. I wasn't living. And what it says there at the end here, it says, step 7 is a change in attitude which permits us to move out of ourselves towards God. Towards God. And that's how I'd been doing. But when I started to let ego and the devil come back in, and I wasn't working a program, and I wasn't going to meetings. The devil was telling me, don't go to any more meetings. Do you see how they run these meetings? Forget it. Forget those meetings. Maybe we'll just go once a week. Maybe we'll do once a month, all right? And the devil's telling me, and I'm like, yeah, okay, devil, that sounds good. And then one day, that devil's like, hey, you know, look how good you've done. And I'm completely separated from God at this point. I'm running the devil's show at this point, all ego. And the devil's like, look how good you've done. 4 years without drinking. I think you could probably do it now. And I was like, yeah. Because I didn't have the other angel on my other shoulder. I wasn't living that life. You know, luckily today, because, you know, the devil just doesn't go away. But today I got some God on one shoulder and the devil on the other shoulder. But back then, it was all devil. And there was nobody, there was no defense attorney. It was all prosecution. And I was like, he's like, look how good you've done. I think you can drink. Why don't you talk to your wife about it? Come back to me. And I didn't talk to my wife about it. I just made a right-hand turn in the liquor store, and next thing you know, I'm drinking vodka. And I'm hiding bottles by the end of the week. And I'm like, devil, what happened? I thought this was going to be different. He's like, yeah, I thought so too, but it turns out it's no different. And then it was just me and the devil for a while. And I don't know how I got sober the last time, to be honest with you. You know, I remember the night, was working at a salon over here in Lewis, and went out with some coworkers and just got hammered. And I remember I was hitting on one of my coworkers, just like total sleazeball. And end up, you know, one thing leads to another. I'm ends up at a house, doing drugs, snorting coke, drinking, smoking. And my wife had left by this point. I was home alone. She was gone. Baby's gone. And the cool thing about it was really, you know, when the first time I got sober and I got punched in the mouth and my ego's deflated, and it just was an escape, right? It wasn't even an honest escape. I had to kind of, it would be years where I'd look back and say, listen, this is what you did, bro. You didn't even really want to get sober. You just didn't want to show your face. But this time was a real heart-wrenching moment where I was like, and I remember I'm standing on this patio. It's like 4 a.m. I don't know if I had any clothes on. I just remember smoking a cigarette and going, what is your plan? Because this ain't going to work. And I had already been friends with a buddy of my father's who had the colonial house up in York, Pennsylvania. And I called him and I said, I'm in trouble. And, you know, I didn't need to get punched in the face. I didn't need to crash a car. I had already lost my wife and child due to my drinking. But that wasn't low enough. You know, they say you can get to the bottom and then start digging. And I think getting to the bottom that night was the drinking and the drugging. But the bottom was just this standing there in the moment, just like, what is up? And they always say that if you get a little bit of AA, you'll never lose it. You know, it'll always come gurgling back up. And, you know, I made the phone call. I said, I think I'm in trouble. And he came and got me. And somehow, some way, I got up to that colonial house, thank God. But, you know, changing my sobriety date for pills and all that other shit. So it wasn't a wrap, right? So, you know, I like to read this. Nobody could explain it to me. I kind of had to go through it. So, you know, whatever, go through it. It's pretty awesome. You know, when you start to learn, you know, how the devil and God work in our lives. And I think one of the big things for me really was this, you know, redefining God. Every time I read, like, you know, entirely ready to have God removed, like, does this mean I have to be, you know, a member of a church? And for me, it doesn't. For me, what it means is that I have to recognize the role that God and the devil play in my life. And the devil, I might have said this the other day, I somehow think we're devil's children. We're a self-centered, I'm a self-centered person. I'm more devil than I am God. I was born more devil-y than I was God-ish. And it's over time where I'm starting to recognize that, and I'm trying to fucking, it's like doing an exorcism on myself. I'm trying to get this fucking devil out of me. And I do pretty good. I have my moments. But I sure fucking recognize it. I can sure tell when the shit's fucking hitting the fan. Let's see if I can read a daily reflections. How's this sound? Does this sound good? Sounds pretty good to me. All right, daily reflection. Here we go. Oh, June 6th. All we do is try. June 6th. Can he now take them all? Everyone? ? Can he now take them all? Everyone? ? Alcoholics Anonymous, page 76. In doing step 6, it helped me a lot to remember that I am striving for spiritual progress. Some of my character defects may be with me for the rest of my life, but most have been toned down or eliminated. All that step six asks of me is to become willing to name my defects, claim them as my own, and be willing to discard the ones I can just for today. As I grow in the program, many of my defects become more objectionable to me than previously, and therefore I need to repeat step six so that I can become happier with myself and maintain my serenity. Yeah. What's that step six? Yeah. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You know, it's... And I've talked about defects of character and shortcomings. You know, they're hard to identify. They're hard to identify. But anyway, I hope everyone's having a great day. I am... I'm having a terrific day. Super grateful to be sober. You know, I don't know if I've shared before, but I used to have a good friend of mine, and for some reason, me and him had a falling out. It was really because of my father. My father's very conservative, and you know, my dad was pretty engulfed in the devil back in at some point. I mean, he was very, you know, he knew everything. Nobody knew anything. He could identify everybody. You know. Liberal, you know how they get, especially military. And this is prior to my mom dying, and my dad was kind of running rampant, so to speak. He's 85 now, so he must have been like 75. Just really hard to, him and I used to fight all the time. And it wasn't until my mom getting sick that we finally had the conversation. And, you know, age has finally caught up to him, and he's still tough. But he's toned it down a bit. But, you know, there was a time where at a birthday party, my dad very opinionated to one of my friends. And my friend was very pissed at my father. And, you know, and I think he should have been. My dad, you know, if it wasn't my father, I'm not sure I would have put up with him as long as I have. Right. I think we could probably all say that about our parents. But, you know, my friend was upset and came to the salon and just, I guess he wanted me to be on his side, and I didn't really want to be on any side. I just was trying to figure out what had happened, and he got mad at me and stormed out. And that was a couple years ago, and this was one of my best friends in the program. You know, big help to me getting sober. And I had to go down to the hardware store because I'm working on my studio, right? And been doing a lot of cool work to it and having a lot of fun with the studio and upgrading it. But I had to get a couple things from Ace, and I saw him and we talked for a minute. And, you know, I said, hey, I've been thinking a lot about you. I hope you're doing well. And, you know, I'm going to give that to God, you know. Sometimes I'll have situations happen in my life that I didn't do anything and I wasn't at fault. Right. And this kind of was one of them. You know, I remember seeing my buddy go storming down the porch. I saw him go not through the window, but I saw him through a window storm by, you know, clearly after a heated discussion with somebody, which would later be my dad. And he left, him and his wife left. And then he came by my shop, I think the next day, and was just like, and I'm like, something happened. I mean, you know, I don't know whose fault it was, but somebody said something, and he just got very upset. And he was like, whatever, and stormed out. And I was like, listen, I haven't done anything, so I'm not going to reach out, right? Because I'm clean on this one. And, you know, that can be, I'm not sure I was doing that rightly, because, yeah, I don't know. It was weird. I just have said, you know what, listen, I didn't do anything. I'm just going to stay out of it, and maybe he'll call. And we literally haven't talked for years. It's been a couple years now. And so that's a green light to really, you know, wave that flag for the rest of my life if I want. You know, I didn't do anything. You acted badly. This is on you, not on me. Ha, ha, ha. Swing my flag. And, you know, humility, God says to me, he says, hey, it's dumb. Deflates my ego. And, you know, because when I saw him, I could have just kept going. I didn't have, you know, screw him. But I didn't. I waited till he walked up, and I was like, hey, man. And we shook hands, and he asked me what I was doing. And I was, you know, just told him I was getting getting some flowers and a few things. And I said, listen, I've been thinking about you. I hope you're doing well. And I said, have a great day. And I walked off. I didn't have to do that. God, well, I did have to do it if I want to be a more a humble self, a level, or step seven kind of person. But the devil was like, you do not have to talk to him. You did nothing. You didn't do anything. And, you know, I don't live that life today. And when I look at this entirely ready to have God remove all of my shortcomings and live in a life of God, that's it. You know, that doesn't mean I have to go to church. That didn't mean I have to read some sort of prayer. That means that I have to have an open heart and have humility and not listen to the devil. Hey, I hope everyone's having a great day, and I will catch you later. Bye.
The sun goes down and dawns just too many times.